Let's get into it. What's up? What's up? Welcome to another episode of All of Our Voice Over with Kif VH. I'm your host, Kif VH, and I am thrilled to welcome to this episode tremendously talented performer, director. She's been working in the industry for years, and please welcome Amber Lee Connors. Amber, thank you so much for being here, dude. This is really, really great to get a chance to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kif. I'm super excited to be here. Awesome. As I mentioned to you before, like, I started listening to your podcast. I was like, whoa, it's so good. Like, so it's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, I started it, I think, like six years ago now.
Oh, my
God. And it was just, you know, it was just every time we would sit, you know, you're sitting at the talent agent's office waiting to go in to audition. You end up talking with the wonderful, you know, VO people. And we talk about everything under the sun except for our craft, because you don't want to get caught up in like vibing and all that other kind of stuff that can happen. And so this has been a nice place to be able to talk about, you know, experience and past and not be not be interrupted by pesky auditions in the middle.
Right.
where are you from? Like, how did your journey lead you to where you're at now?
Oh my gosh, this is a good question. And normally I give like the super summarized version, but I'm not going to do that today. Yeah. You get the full spiel.
Amazing. Thank you for giving
Yeah, of course.
It makes it a lot easier for me.
it's wild. Like, as I'm sure you know, like, everybody's journey is like crazy different. Like, it's crazy different. So I'm originally from Ohio. I was born in Cleveland.
What? Oh, no kidding. What part of Cleveland?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, I mean, I was born at the Cleveland Hospital, so I don't know the exact location, but
got you. Like, downtown.
I've lived all over Ohio. Like, I was moving constantly growing up, so it's really hard to be like, this area. But it's more like Northeast Ohio specifically, and like the surrounding areas of like Cleveland and
like Ashtabula out there, that kind of stuff, and
exactly. Okay. But yeah, so like it's so crazy because like I'm originally from Ohio, and My mom like had me. She was a single mother. Oh, wow. So she's a badass though. Like, let me tell you, she was raising me by herself, working two jobs and putting herself through college.
Oh my God.
She had me at 21. Yeah, like it was wild. Like, she's so friggin' strong. But it's
beautiful.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be where I am now like without my mom, because she has always been like so supportive, and I got very lucky in that regard. Like, we didn't know like who my father was till I was probably like close to 14 or something.
Wow. So, oh my gosh. Was that something that haunting is the wrong word, but like, I imagine like, were you curious about it? That how did it, not to turn this into a Dr. Phil conversation. And tell me if something is like, you don't want to go there. I'm happy not to go there, but like,
no, thank you, Kif. Like, I'm all about like, you know, like vulnerability and having these conversations. But it was definitely something that like I'd always wondered about. And it was crazy because it could have been a few people, a few gentlemen who were my father. And we kind of like went down the line like one by one with like genetic testing at some point to like figure it out. But like, it was really hard, like, as a little girl, because like I would meet like, I think, a guy, and he'd be like, oh, like, I'm your dad. And then he's not my dad.
Oh,
and
my
then
God.
He would just vanish. Like, right. So he would like disappear. Yeah. And then my mom was also dating too. So I was just like, it was wild in that regard. Cause I'm just like, oh, I was like, this person, my father? No. Okay. Like, you know, like it was weird. But, my mom, like, oh my gosh. Like, she met my stepfather, which, they're no longer together. And he passed away like, a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. But, there's so much. So she met this guy that, she started dating, who's my stepfather. I didn't know this until much longer, like, but he had stalked her for a couple years, and then she decides to date him.
Oh my God, you can imagine
how this relationship went. So it wasn't great. Like, it wasn't great. And like, I have a very complicated relationship with him, just because it's like, he was like in my life for so long, and he's like the closest thing I had to a father figure. He was also like emotionally abusive to my mom and like all kinds of stuff. So it's very interesting, which I have a little trauma bag I use for acting, so you know, just it goes in the trauma bag. But yeah, like, so she was with him when we finally found my biological father.
Wow.
So we kind of like parsed down who it was and got tested, was my biological father, and like wanted nothing to do with me still.
Oh my Lord. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was crazy. Dude, and I'm just like for years, I'm just like, I just couldn't understand like why, like, you know, like why doesn't like my real father like call me? Like why doesn't like he want a relationship with me? Like I didn't understand. All the while, like, you know, like my my stepfather who was in my life was very, very stoic, very stoic. Like he only ever talked to me to like criticize me, like, you know, like that kind of thing.
Wow.
But at the same time, like it's complicated because he was also the closest thing I've had to like a father.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like creating this, you know, fulfilling in one respects, fulfilling a need, but not necessarily doing it well. And, and creating more drama and trauma for you and your mother.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh my God, dude.
And it's in just adding more on top of that, because that can't just be it by itself, you know, like just sprinkling some paprika on top.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom and my stepdad were both alcoholics. So like hardcore alcoholics for like the longest time. And so like not only did I like not like my mom was very, very young mother, like, and again, like I love her so much. She just, you know, her mother. Ooh, Kiff, I could write a book. Like I could write a book. Like my grandmother was very abusive to my mother. So like she like started drinking at a young age, and like she was like very like emotionally immature, but like she was always very supportive of me and like very loving. But because of that, like, I ended up mothering my mother, Kiff.
Yeah.
I ended up parenting my mother at a very young age. So she would have like, you know, there'd be issues in the relationship. Like they're both like drinking, they're both fighting, like stuff's like being broken and everything. And then she would like tell me all the issues. And so it kind of made it so I had to take her side. So I couldn't develop a relationship with him either. So it was so weird, but we also had like these great memories of him like teaching me how to play chess and introducing me to Lord of the Rings, which I love. So it's like, it's really complicated.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's kind of like where that's kind of the atmosphere that I came from. And we also like were very poor, like very poor on top of it. So it's just, it's real. It's real wild. It's real wild.
What was the regard. Like? What was the impetus to move around Ohio? Like that? You know, was it seeking? Was it work related? Was it just like?
Oh my gosh. Well, most of it was when I was still very young. Like I was still a kid. So we were moving around. Like I think it was. I don't know if it was like my mom like wanting to constantly get us out of bad areas and into like better areas, like as best as she could, on top of like work. And then like, you know, like I think we moved like 4 or 5 times before I was even in first grade. Like it was crazy. And then we ended up moving in with you know, who ended up being my stepdad. And that's where I stayed for a while. But like the area started getting really, really bad. And then
Was that in and around Cleveland, or was that outside of Cleveland?
Yeah, it was like outside of Cleveland. Like it was like Parma. And like what I mean by like the areas getting bad is like I was in junior high, and there were like hardcore like fights in school. Like people were like bringing stuff. Like I'm talking like girl fights. I remember this girl, like these two girls were fighting, and one like bashed the other girl's head against a sink multiple times, and she had to like be like taken out in an ambulance. So my mom's like, maybe we should move.
Maybe if we're gonna get into a different district, we can find something.
Maybe the
west side isn't where we need to be.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. Yeah. And what's so interesting, Kiff, is that I was never bullied until I moved into a better area. Like that's the little highlight there. I was not bullied at school until I moved.
Oh, geez. So let's talk about the bullying. In the middle of all the things that you're focusing on at home, and when you're a kid, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, this is my normal, and you're pivoting through it, but it also is daily trauma.
Absolutely. It's a lot of trauma. Like, and, so like when we moved, like in the middle of when I was in junior high, so like in the middle of like seventh grade, and we moved to like this like nicer area called like Strongsville, and it was like a mixture of like people who like who weren't like financially well off mixed with like very very well off people, like very well off people. So it was a weird splice, you know. I started getting bullied by this group of girls. It was like these three girls, and they're in my first period class right in the morning. They're on the same bus as me because of course. And they initially, when I was brand new, they wanted to be my friend. And I am very kind of picky about who I'm going to be friends with, especially like if I think like you're a bully or you're not like a great person. I got a weird vibe. I wouldn't be like their friend. And then they started bullying me. So like it was a mixture of like they would find me in assemblies and like sit behind me and pull my hair. They would like heckle me on the bus. They like stole my report card out of my hands and like told me I was stupid. All kinds of, you know, like just the girly things.
So when did you find, or when did that aspect to your life sort of balance out? Was it when you got out of junior high or away from them, or how did this?
So like after junior high, like into high school, like you know, it was bigger pool. So they were still there, but they weren't bullying me anymore. But then, Kev, I had a teacher who started bullying me. So
what the hell?
Like it's a time.
Yeah.
Specifically, like I've kind of had like this history of like women in positions of power, like teachers and whatnot, like bullying me. Like I don't like just to add that to the mix. It's very very strange, and it started when I was like even in like daycare. Like it's so wild to me. But so like I had. Well, rewinding a little bit, like before I discovered that I wanted to be acting, like I like my mom was always like really into video games, and like, that's how I got into video games. And I had an uncle who was like about like 8 years older than me, so he felt more like an older brother. And like when she was working her jobs and stuff, I would stay with my grandmother, and like he would like kind of watch me and hang out with me. So like he introduced me to like all the classic games that I really love, like, you know, Tomb Raider and like Resident Evil, like Silent Hill, like the Final Fantasy series. And my mom herself, like when she was a kid, she would like save up her lunch money to, she'd skip lunch and go to the arcade to like play like Pac-Man and stuff.
I can relate to that 100%. I mean, it sounds like from the picture you're painting, like the, you know, the challenges of of just real life and the struggles that you and your mom were going through and your own relationship with your mom and her mom and all of that, like the place and joy that in particular that games and media provide. It's like it's a way to connect that's not like stressful, right? Like it's a safe place to be.
Exactly. And it was absolutely like 100% like that escapism for me, like video, like I love reading, like I love video games, like I love like animation, like movies, like all this stuff. And like I literally tell people, I'm like, you know, video games saved my life. Like I would not be here right now if I didn't have kind of that in my life. So as a child, like I was like, I want to be Laura Croft when I grow up, but that's not a profession.
That's right. My father, I'm not 100% certain, is extremely wealthy and has a giant mansion for me to be able to take.
Right.
Go on adventures.
Well, I'll be an archaeologist, but I was like, oh, well, that doesn't involve raiding tombs and shooting dinosaurs. So it's not the same.
That's right.
But eventually, like, I think it's probably influenced from, like, the relationship I ended up having, like, with my mother. Like, I decided at the prime age of 13 that I wanted to be a psychiatrist. Like, that's how old soul I was. I was like, okay, I'm going to be a psychiatrist. Yeah. And so going into high school, I started setting myself up to kind of eventually go into medical school. So I was like, I'm going to take like anatomy, physiology. I'm going to take all these honors courses. I'm going to take like Latin, because I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And, I ended up, and this brings us full circle, Kiff, to the teacher who was bullying me.
Oh my God.
And it was my Latin teacher. She hated my guts. And I still, to this day, like do not understand why.
Yeah.
And, like, so again, again, like, everything you now know that has been going on in my home life. And then, you know, like, probably right when I started getting into high school, like, I think freshman, end of freshman year into sophomore year, my mom ends up getting a divorce from my stepfather. Okay. So, like, and she was a homemaker. So at that point when she married him, because he was like very controlling. Yeah. So it was just, oh, it was so hard. Like,
and suddenly she's got to get out and get work and take, be able to provide for you, provide rent, et cetera. Oh my God, dude.
Yeah. So like, while she's like, you know, trying to provide for us, like she starts having like this chronic pain and it turns out because nothing, it can never just be one thing, Kip. It's, it turns out that she has fibromyalgia, she has lupus, and she has rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh my God.
And she can't physically work because, like, she's in so much pain. So, like, oh, like, so she was thankfully, like, able to, like, get on disability. But as I'm sure you can imagine, like, it's
not enough.
A lot. Yeah. And she has me, and I have a younger brother. Like, okay. I have a younger brother who is autistic. So she has to take care of him and, you know, really, like, help him on top of everything going through this divorce. She had to have a partial hysterectomy and they didn't give her hormones. Like, it was just this clusterfuck of shit going on. And, you know, sometimes like we couldn't afford to pay bills. So our power would get shut off. Our water would get shut off.
Yeah.
And all of this, I'm trying to go through high school. Like, I'm trying to like juggle all this.
Right.
And, I start getting sick a lot from stress, like my hair starts falling out. Like it's pretty bad. And like, instead of like my, like I'm missing a lot of school. And instead of like my first period, like my Latin teacher, like being like, hey, like what's going on at home? Cause like normally like I'm a really good student. It's like, what's going on? Like what's happening? She just like would single me out in class and like bully me. And, we needed like a dictionary. And I literally could not afford a dictionary.
Yeah.
And I could not go to the library because all our library cards had been maxed out because over the years, my mom had taken stuff out and forgotten to return it.
Yeah.
And library cards out in my name, my brother's, like, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
kind of
totally. And there's this massive fine for every name in the account. And it's like trying to, it's like trying to get credit. But the librarians are brutal.
Yeah, so I can't even take out a dictionary at home to use for my homework.
Yeah.
And I literally, she's like, and I tell her, I'm like, she's like, why didn't you do this assignment? And like in front of the whole class, I'm like, well, like, you know, like I don't have a dictionary. And I'm like, I can't afford a dictionary. Yeah. And she's like, what kind of person can't afford a dictionary? And like, oh that God, kind dude. Of shit.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And I went to like, you know, every year there's like Latin convention where you go and you take a bunch of tests and you compete and everything. And I think it was like $50 or $60. And like, I had originally signed up and like my mom had told me like, I'll get like, yeah, you can go and everything.
Yeah.
And then I didn't have the money. Like I couldn't get the money to go. So I emailed my teacher. I was like, hey, I'm so sorry. I can't go. And she's like, well, you already said that you were going to go. So like, you have to go, like, you can't like, you know, back out. So like, I had to borrow the money from a friend.
Oh my God.
Go. And so I go and like I enter like this art piece and I take all these tests and everything. And I end up winning some awards, which is really cool. Like I placed for like literature knowledge and my art piece won an award.
Oh
and like
God.
It was really cool. But my teacher, you know what? She's like, she turns to me after. She's like, oh, I'm really surprised you placed in anything at all. Wow, I really can't believe you won anything. Like, I'm like, this is.
Dude.
So messed up. Like, I don't. And like, I didn't do anything aside from like be sick and not show up to school.
Yeah, right.
Oh
my God, dude.
I mean, to provide
commentary from on this. I empathize with your journey and how challenging. Like everything that you just that you value programmed in and, you know, and like even to hear you tell it and to share your story and your vulnerability and openness about everything that you've gone through that's led you to where you are now is really like remarkable and powerful. And I just wanted to, you know, express that I appreciate you sharing, you know, what your foundation has been and, you know, how you and you know, what steps you've made to, like, in spite of those challenges, still find success and you know, be awarded for your skill and your background. It's really inspiring and incredible, dude.
Oh, thank you so much, Kiff. Like, yeah, I don't usually, because it's there's so much there that I don't usually, like, it's just because it takes so much time to be like, well, this happened and this happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I think it's important, because, like, I know that if I had, like, heard that somebody else went through this stuff when I was in that situation, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But, like, man, and, like, so... on top of it, like, while I was at this convention, she was like, well, what do you want to do with your life? And I was like, oh, well, like, you know, I want to be a psychiatrist. And she goes on to tell me how I'm too stupid to be a psychiatrist, and that instead I should look into art therapy, which her sister does, and her sister's dumb. So, like, that's why she's doing art therapy.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, I was like, I got to get out of this class. Like, I got to get out of this class, because, to be fully transparent, like, on top of everything else I was going through, like, this, like, my interactions with this woman was literally making me suicidal. Like, I had contemplated it, like, you know, multiple times. And I was like, you know what? Like, I got to remove myself from the situation, because it's not getting better.
Wow.
So I did. And I was able to finish high school because of that.
Yeah.
But, now that I was, like, out of that class, like, you know, like, I was like, okay, like, I was, well, to kind of pivot over to some good stuff, for to some happier things, like, for fun, like, I would play video games with my friends, yeah, or, sure. You know, like, we would read fan fiction, and we would, like, do voices for the characters, and, like, a lot of games back then, like, a lot of PlayStation games, like, didn't have, like, VO, so we would, like, read the voices, like, the lines, like, in voices and stuff, and I was like, oh, I really love this, and it's... It's so crazy, because I was like, oh, well, when I was 15, and it's hard to believe that all that stuff happened before I was 15, but it did. I was like, you know what? Like, I can't be Lara Croft, but maybe one day, like, I could, like, voice a character like her, or, like, live out multiple lives through performance.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool. So I literally sat down and just Googled how to become a voice actor when I was 15. I found this forum. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was, called, like, the Voice Acting Alliance.
Okay.
And, I made an account, and, like, there was a bunch of cool stuff on the website. It was just a bunch of, like, hobbyists who, like, got together and, like, made, like, radio plays, or, like, did voices for, like, Flash animations.
Yeah.
And did, like, fan dubs and all kinds of stuff. And, like, this also saved my life. Like, video games plus this saved my life, because suddenly, like, I had, like, a community of friends, like,
yes,
who, you know, just, it was completely removed from, like, what I was going on in my life. Like, I could just create. So, I just started, like, making my own radio plays. Like, I would write scripts. I would, like, completely remix sound effects. And, like, I just love audio, Kiff. Like, I love audio. I love voices. I love performance. Like, I love storytelling. So it was so cool and just so much fun. And I was like, I really love doing this. And, you know, like, I had when I kind of started doing professional work, like, I had no professional training. Like, I was completely self-taught because I couldn't afford classes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just like, well, I'm just going to, you know, practice a lot and do this.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, like, one of my, teachers, one of my non-abusive teachers was like, you know, oh, you're like, you really like dramatic. Like, you should try out for theater. So, I did once. And, I kind of like, I also had pretty extreme social anxiety when I was around that age, because, like, and it makes sense now, like, now that I've been through therapy and, like, I've done a lot of reflecting, like, of course, all that's, like, stored in my body, and it's crippling.
Yeah.
So, I remember one of my friends was auditioning for this play, and I was like, oh, like, you know what? I'll audition too. Like, you know, like, I might really love this. Like, I love watching plays, and, you know, like, I've been doing, like, the hobbyist, like, you know, voice acting online and stuff. Like, this would be really cool.
Yeah.
So I auditioned for a play, and I was very, very nervous, and it was, like, a cold reading with, like, you know, like, other people who were also auditioning, and I started shaking, and I started stuttering, and then instead of my scene partner being very graceful and understanding, he started making fun of me in the middle of my audition,
Judas
Priest, on stage in front of everybody else auditioning and a bunch of teachers.
Oh, my God.
So, like, that was, like, the first and last time I was like, I guess theater's not for me. Like, you know, like, I'm just, like it was scarring in that way. Like yeah. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Completely. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's just, man, like, so having like that, I was like, okay, I'm just gonna like, at least with voice acting, like nobody can see me. Mm-hmm. I would still get like really nervous. But over time that kind of dissipated. Of course, like, you know, everybody still gets nervous, like even now, but like, oh, yeah. It was like the part where my heart was pounding when I would just like even hit record, like back when I was starting.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Did yeah. like, I mean, I can, there are a lot of aspects to your story, to your background, to the, I mean, yeah. that I really, relate to and struggled with in, I think my situation was different from yours, but like in terms of the certainly tied to performance and anxiety and the validation of a small community of your talent or ability, or just not even like take away craft, like just go to simply like you were saying, like storytelling and playing with your friends and playing with characters that you love. And then being told that that's not either valid or something that's serviceable as a career, like any of those things. Right. And people trying to, as Flavor Flav says on the song, "You Got He Got Game," people be on the lookout for the spirit snipers trying to steal your light. And like that's what. You know, I felt like, too, like growing up where I grew up,
right.
that there was just this feeling of, who do you think you are to try that thing? You can't
yeah,
do that. You know?
Absolutely. It's a real thing, like 100%. And like, I think, you know, I was very fortunate in that, like in this avenue, my mom was so supportive.
Mm.
Like, you know, like no parent's perfect, but like sure. in this area, like she's always loved me fully and she's always been super supportive of whatever I wanted to do. Like ever awesome. Since I was a kid, she's like, just follow your dreams, like do whatever you want to do.
Amazing.
And weirdly enough, like you're saying, like a lot of the spirit snipers were my friends and like people in yeah. my life that yeah. were not my mother. Like it was so kind of backwards in that regard, because a lot of times people are like, oh, I want like permission, I want like approval from my parents.
Yeah.
But that was kind of like my rock in that regard. Like and I think part of it, like my mom had always told me that she wanted to be an actor, but like her mother told her she was like too ugly and stupid to do it. Which is absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
I don't have a relationship with my grandmother, if you couldn't tell. Like, yeah, she's not in my life. She's not in my life.
I'm glad.
But, like, so my mom was always so supportive in that regard. And she, like, she was, you know, like, I don't want you to, like, just do something just, like, for a paycheck. Like, I don't want you to, like, be miserable. To yeah. the point where, like, I didn't even go to college. Like, she did not pressure me to go to college. She was so supportive of, like, my voice acting and everything that I was doing. She's like, you don't need to go to college. Just keep pursuing what you're doing. Like,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
which I'm super, super thankful for that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, it's crazy. So, like, because of that, and because I think all of, like, and, you know, like, I don't regret anything that's happened in my life, because, like, it's made me who I am, and, like, I wouldn't have made the same decisions, like, you know, all that kinds of stuff. I wouldn't yeah. have met the people that I know now.
Yeah.
Wouldn't appreciate, you know, the things that I do. But it's interesting, because, like, I already, like, as soon as I fell in love with acting and, like, voice acting, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to do this. So, like, I was like, I'm not going to be a psychiatrist anymore. Like, I'm just going to work towards this. So like, I didn't end up going to college, and there was like a lot of judgment from like other family members, like other friends who thought like, oh, like you're a loser. Like, what are you doing? Like,
oh
you're
God,
not
yeah.
going to like end up doing anything like that
right.
kind of situation.
Right.
And, you know, being in Ohio, there's not a lot, especially if no. you're not doing theater, because I was traumatized from doing theater.
Yeah. Like, right.
So a lot of what I was doing was just like online. Like I would, you know, I got my first little paying jobs were like doing like some like podcast taglines and stuff like yeah. online for like little tiny like radio stations.
Were you
stuff.
Doing like was Fiverr happening at that time, or was it
yeah.
like is that like where you were finding opportunities like
yeah.
that
like,
Craigslist or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. I would do whatever I could. Like honestly, like and
yeah.
It's so interesting, because like some people like are just like, oh, like Fiverr. I'm like, well, if you are literally, if you have nothing, if
yeah.
you have no way, like, I saw it as like, you know, helping because like at the time, like I think it was when Fiverr like just started.
Yeah.
So I was doing like Fiverr jobs, but it was like for other creators, like other, it wasn't like big companies. It was like other creators who like, I have a little podcast or, you know, like I, you know, want to make a video and stuff. So it was like kind of just like getting something, getting some kind of like monetary compensation.
100%. Totally. Yeah. And I mean, I not to interrupt, I'm sorry, but like, I started my VO career in Toledo when I was living in because I spent a ton of time in Ohio and like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. In Toledo, there was a company called Business Voice and I would do on hold messaging for them, IVR. Yes.
And oh my gosh. Yeah.
That was my on ramp. That was how I really got started working professionally. So like when you start in a market that's not a robust, you know, Los Angeles type of market or New York or Chicago, like it is any port in a storm and it's competitive in that way of like you're competing really truly against yourself and that standing up and saying, I want to give this a shot in a community that doesn't support that type of, it's not true. The community will support it, but there's not a massive community of voice actors working their way, trying to get started. You know what I mean? But you find your people and you do it. That's so amazing.
Yeah, like and like I like you said, like I do everything. Like I do everything. Yeah. I would do anything. So like I've done IVR. Like I actually love IVR. I've done IVR. I commercials, audiobooks, games, like e-learning. Like I will do anything. Yeah. Like I also just love I love all of it. So that's a bonus. But
yes.
Yeah, so like I was doing everything I could. And I was trying to save up money because I'm like I was trying to save up money, but I knew in my heart that like if I took a job, like a day job, it would take me farther away from my craft. It would take me farther away from my goals, even if I was making that money, because I wouldn't have the time to practice and stuff. So I lived very, very frugally. Like I did not have like any type of monthly payment. Like I didn't have a car for a very long time, anything that I could just like, I'm just like, I need to just save money. I just need to save money. Especially like, oh my gosh, like, I've learned from my past mistakes, but I fell into some not great relationships romantically. And kind of like, oh, that was a whole, oh my bleh. Through some of like my, little VO work I was doing online, I, got a job as a script writer. And this was probably a commercial script writer. It was probably, oh my gosh, like what, I think in 2012, I started script writing for commercials.
Great.
And my guy, they were paying me pennies, but I did not care. I'm like, I will take any sort of income I can.
Yes.
And I was doing such a large volume of these script commercials for this company. And like, basically this company, they owned a bunch of like TV screens across like the country. So like, you know, the screens at like gas stations
that
play ads. I would write the copy for those ads that would be playing on
so
the screen.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I would do the VO for most of them too. And like, they were not paying me like anything at all. And I'm like, you know what? But I was like, I was doing such a large volume of it. I was making pretty good money. But at the time, I fell into this relationship that was pretty abusive, pretty awful. And I was fully financially supporting him with my pennies.
So, oh, my God.
Yeah. And like, well, eventually he cheated on me with one of my best friends of like 7 years. And I cut both of them out of my life. But, you know how it go. Like,
yeah.
So I was like, okay, and like that was like when I was like at the time I had moved in with a friend and we were like living with my friend. And when I say that, like, this was like just giving you a little baby tidbit of the kind of stuff I'm talking about, when I broke up with him, he left a loaded shotgun in my friend's bed with a note saying, keep this away from me, I can't be held accountable for my actions.
Oh my God.
So I was like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. I gotta move out. So I moved back in with my mom, and I love her so much, but I was not able to financially save money there.
Yeah.
So I was doing my little pet for pennies like job, because I had tried working at Radio Shack before, and I did that for a few months, but it, like I was saying, it completely ate my time. Like it ate my time to where I was just living paycheck to paycheck, hour to hour, and they were keeping me right under full time, so I had no benefits, you know. So I'm like,
yeah, exactly. 34 hours a week, so whatever. So you don't qualify, and they just eat your time.
Exactly. And yeah. I'm like, this is taking me farther from what I want. So yes. I quit that. I was like, it's okay. I'm gonna keep writing my little scripts. I'm gonna keep doing whatever I can online. It's gonna be fine.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like I moved out of like my friend's house back home with my mom. I couldn't save money there. And then my ex moved out of my friend's house. So I moved back in with my friend, and I am not kidding, Kiff. And I say, I moved 8 times in the span of a year, like 8 times, just trying to save money, like trying to do whatever I could. So like I moved in with my friend, and then he was like, oh, my girlfriend's moving in. So, you gotta go. And I was like, okay, I'll go somewhere. God. So,
were you still in Ohio at this point?
I was still in Ohio. Yeah. And, around this time, Kiff, my biological father, like I had somehow like, so he was an electrical engineer, and he would go overseas for like years at a time and then come back.
Okay.
And I think he called me like once every like 3 years,
yeah,
just to be like, what's going on? Like, you know? And, yeah. So like he called me recently, like, it wasn't too long ago. Like, I think it was when I was like 18. My timeline, there's just so much that happens such a short period of time, but basically before all of this, before like, you know, the relationship and stuff, I had gotten to have dinner with my biological father once.
Okay.
And I didn't find out until later. It's because my mom ran into him and they slept together, and that's why he felt obligated to see me. So it's pretty friggin' terrible. But I didn't know that at the time. So I was like, oh, like surely. Oh, I'm like, oh, this is great. Like maybe he wants to have a relationship with me. So like it'd be that and like our phone call like once every 3 years, once a year or whatever.
Yeah.
And right after I had to move again, so backtracking a little bit, I ended up losing the script writing job because I got an email about how like, oh, we've made like $1 million in profits. Let's all go to Dave and Buster's or whatever. I'm like, I'm in Ohio and I'm getting paid pennies. Like, I'd really appreciate it if I get a higher rate. And it was like, no. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm not, I guess I don't work there anymore. So I was probably like at my lowest. and I was like, I need a place where I can like just get back on my feet. And then around this time, my dad, my biological father, had called me and was like, oh, like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, oh man, well, bad relationships, having to move, like all this stuff. He was like, oh, well, hey, like, why don't you come move in with me? Like, I have this house. I need somebody to watch it while I'm overseas. Like, it'll be great. Like, I'll buy you like some furniture and everything. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, I would really appreciate that. And, maybe like, I was thinking like, oh, like finally I'll get to know like my father, like we can have a relationship together.
Yeah.
So I move in, no furniture ever materialized. So I'm sleeping on an armchair in a room, and I'm like, this is fine. And I have no car. So like, I can't like go get groceries or anything. So like, I'm not eating half the time. I'm like, this is fine. It will be fine. Like, I made my little closet booth. I'm like, I'm just going to keep working. I'm going to keep working at this. And, I have a half brother from my biological father's side, and, I would babysit him for him while I was living there. And like, you know, like a few times, like I was doing conventions because like I was in this indie game that like really like popped off, which was really cool. So I got to go to a few conventions and stuff.
Awesome.
So I was there for, I think like maybe less than a month. And he told, like, I come downstairs one day and like, we haven't like really spoken. Like, I'm just kind of there in this house, and like, he's smoking all the time playing like Call of Duty. And that's all I see him do.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, like, I'm selling the house and you have to get out.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Like literally like out of nowhere. So I'm not even kidding when I say I called one of my friends and asked if I could, you know, move in with her. And she said I could. So I packed up my stuff and I came downstairs. I was like, hey, like, just so you know, like, I'm moving with my friend. And he was like, oh, okay. She came over, like I filled her car with all the stuff that like was essential. I went upstairs. I wrote like a 10-page handwritten letter disowning him, taped it on his door. And then I got in the car with my friend, like blocked his number on everything. And then I left, and I have not spoken to him since.
Good for you. Wow. I mean, yeah. just the boundaries that you've had to draw in so many different aspects of your life, and is remarkable. And like that you've, you know, like you, you know, I'm sure you've had support from therapy and that kind of things and that kind of thing to help you get to that place. But my God, incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like I've, because again, like I wasn't able to afford therapy for a long time. So I've only been like, I finally started therapy like 2 years ago and it's been great. I'm like, I think everybody should have a therapist and it should be free, but you know.
I agree 100% on all things.
Yeah. But so that was my relationship with my biological father.
Yeah.
And then my relationship with my stepdad, like that, like as soon as the divorce happened, that was non-existent. That was just completely non-existent. Yeah. And it just sucked. So I was like, man, like what is going on? Like, oh, yeah. This is just crazy. But I was really, really hurt, like as you can imagine. I'm just of like, course. I can't believe that like you haven't been a part of my life my entire life. And now, like, you know, it's a whole mess. And then he ended up lying about selling the house and going overseas and everything. So there's that. But I don't need that energy in my life. So it's fine.
No. And during all of this time, and you start, like, you're at a place now where I see, like, in particular, like a lot of the waters that you're swimming in terms of work have been like anime dubbing. I see you directing and doing video games and things. Like how with everything going on in your personal life, how are you able to launch and get into that and sort of build the reputation for yourself that you've built in your work? Like what has been that process?
Yeah, exactly. Like I've just like never given up. Like I've just constantly like doggedly pursued it. And I moved like multiple times, and like what finally kind of enabled me to really get my footing was that you know, like I probably moved like three more times after what I just told you. And then I ended up moving in with a friend, and her family was very well off. So like they would pay me to cook meals for them. So like I was like a live-in cook at their house. And I was like, this is fine. This is great. Like I can cook, and then I can go in my little closet. I can record.
Yep.
And I started just like kind of like recovering from everything and like doing that. And like I started directing because I was part of like I got cast in this little like indie survival horror game called like Dread Out. Uh-huh. And the company hired me. It's an Indonesian horror game. The company hired me. I did the demo and they're like, they like my work so much. And I was like, hey, like, well, if you ever need, you know, more voices, like let me know, because at this point I had built this network of other actors because of years and years of being online.
Yeah.
And they're like, actually, yeah, could you cast and direct the rest of the characters like for this? And this was like in, oh my gosh, I think 2012. It was still 2012. It was 2012 when this happened.
Wow.
Cusp of like end of 2011 into 2012. And so that's like how I got like my first directing gig for this game. And that's how I decided, I was like, you know what? Because like even when I was like, you know, once I decided I want to be a voice actor, I was like, man, like I'd love to have my own studio someday. Mm. I don't know how that's going to happen, but like I love directing. Like I love, you know, I love audio. I love helping people. I love giving up people opportunities. So I started getting like these directing jobs based off of my voice work for having been in these projects. Yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start my own little indie studio from my bedroom, which I did, which is where Sound Cadence came from.
That's incredible.
It was just weird. It was just weird. Like stuff just kept happening, which is why like a lot of my early directing work, like I was also in the cast of it because I had been cast first.
Yes.
And then the team liked me and they're like, yeah, you can just do the thing.
Yeah. Just do the thing for us. You know the people and we trust you to carry it out. That's great.
Yeah. So it's really cool. And then I just kept doing my online like indie work and everything. And then I had an opportunity to be in my first anime role for ADR dubbing in New York. I drove from Ohio to New York borrowing a car because I didn't have a car.
Oh my God.
I drove there, did the job for a day, drove back the next day. Yeah. Like, and you know, like I would make that trip to New York a couple more times, but that was in that was in like 2015. I was like, okay, because I'd always been scared. I was like, oh, what if, like, you know, I was having nightmares about the beeps. I'm like, what if I can't do the beeps? Like, what if I can't hit the timing? But so I was really nervous. But I did it. And I had some friends in Texas from the online community that I had, you know, voice acting community that I had from over the years. And I was like, hey, like, is anybody like looking for a roommate? Like, I reached out to a couple people. And one of my friends was like, yeah, like, that'd be great. So I ended up saving up money. And just for perspective, it took me 2 years, like, living with my friend, like, cooking and like doing what I could to save up enough money to move. Like, I spent 2 years putting it away.
Yes.
And so I was like, yeah, like, so I got a plane ticket. I went out, we looked for places. And then I moved out there in like spring of like 2016. Okay. And I had less than $6,000 to my name. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make it work. If I have to sleep in my car and get a gym membership to bathe, I'm going to make it work. Like, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And I feel like you kind of just need that grit of just like, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And for, you know, I think in this case, for better, all the stuff I'd been through in my life, like, I know that I'll always be okay. Like, no matter what happens, like, I'll be able to take care of myself. Like, I will be okay, like, one way or the other. So,
yeah.
Thankfully, things go well. I don't have to live out of my car. I made a demo in my closet, and then one of my connections that I had from the online community, like, was a director at Funimation, and he was kind enough to Clifford Chapin. He was kind enough to pass my demo around, and it got me my first audition with Funimation.
Amazing.
And it kind of just like snowballed from there. Like, I just kept, like, you know, working at that. And while I was doing that, I was still like directing projects. It kind of like fell onto my lap.
Wow. I'm sorry to interrupt. With Funimation, is it a constant audition for every show, or once you get in and get known and they like you, did they start direct booking you for things, or what's that particular world like?
Yeah. It's changed a lot over the years. I feel like everything's kind of constantly in flux. When I got down there, simuldubs were just becoming a thing. So this was 2016, like the spring, summer of 2016.
And a simuldub, what's a simuldub, just for reference?
Of course. So a simuldub is basically, so like in the past, like, you know, like something would come out in like, you know, like Japan, like it would come over here, the whole thing would get dubbed, and then we'd get released to DVD.
Okay.
So for a simuldub is while it's still airing in Japan, the studio is dubbing it and it's coming out on streaming services like a week later.
I
so it's
see.
Very fast. Yeah.
Okay. So, gotcha.
So I kind of moved, and there was like this big boom of work because they started doing all these simuldubs.
I see.
And in the beginning, like, again, like, I wasn't well known. Like, people didn't know who I was. Like, I just, you know, like, I just had a referral in a demo. So it got me an audition.
Yeah.
And then I was able to, like, do Walla. Like, I got pulled in for Walla. Like, I did, like, a lot of bits and stuff. I think my first Walla session was for One Piece. It was really cool. I got to be a mermaid. Awesome. That was exciting.
God, amazing.
Yeah. And then I just kept doing Walla. And, you know, like, back then, you know, they, like, if you were new, like, they would try you out on Walla, then they let you do bits. And then if you were, like, doing a good job, like, if you're professional, like, if you could act, they would, like, slowly have you do smaller parts until they would trust you with, like, a bigger part and, like, with a lead. But so some parts I would book from auditioning. Because they would still audition certain shows, and like it'd be like an in-person audition situation, which is really, really cool, because like you would come in, there'd be binders, you pick what characters you want, you'd go in and read for the director live, they'd redirect you, all that kind of cool stuff.
Amazing.
So yeah, so like thankfully, like, I managed to like impress a couple people. They really like my work, so I got to do, like, you know, and each director's different, and there was a bunch of directors there, so you kind of have to start fresh with each director of like what they know you can do, and like, you know, if they, you know, their style and everything. So I was doing that. And things were going well. Like, I booked my first lead, and then that was for Keijo, which is a really fun show. And then, got to do like more and more shows. And as with everything, there's like lulls and like, you know, busy periods. So thankfully I still was doing like other things. I was like doing commercial work. I was doing like, you know, books and stuff, and I was directing, and I was still like trying to get an agent, like everything that I could, just to constantly kind of create momentum. And,
yeah.
While while I was there. I was weird situations, weird, wonderful situations. My friends, they had a studio location and they had a spare room. And I had just recently been, you know, approached to direct my direct and record through my studio my first anime dub.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, I don't really have a space. I was like, hey, could I use your room for this? And like, yeah, go for it. So they let me use this studio space in their building for free. And then I would record them for their auditions or whatever they wanted, just so I could make sure it's mutually beneficial, yeah. Not just, just sitting there. So I would help them record anything for their projects, because they would do a bunch of online media. I'd help them with their auditions.
Yeah.
And it was really great. So I was able to kind of build my studio from having this one room for free and get more opportunities, work with more clients, and work begets work. So the more stuff I was doing, more people were you did this for our parent company or so on and so forth. So that was really cool. And eventually they ended up hey, we need to get a new building because we're expanding operations. So you can stay here and use this building for free until the lease is up, because we can't get out of the lease. And I was like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I'll still keep recording your stuff. Whatever you want me to do, let me know.
Incredible.
And I was able to build myself up acting wise and studio wise to the point where I could actually afford to take the lease myself.
Wow.
And so I have that building in Texas still, even though I'm now in LA, my studio is still, the main hub is still operating out of that location, which is really cool.
Fantastic.
And I was able to bring in more people to help direct, engineers and everything. And it's really great to see how things have grown literally from nothing, from my little bedroom.
From your little closet, and being able to, and have the vision of the way through this is to make more than just, it takes that kind of hustle and rubbing, you rub two sticks together until you get a third stick, and that is the drive and what it takes to make a life as an artist, certainly today, but I'm just so completely inspired by your entire story, dude. It's beautiful and hard, and I relate to so many of the things that you were talking about, but what comes screaming through to me too is your positive attitude throughout everything. It'd be real easy to not. And I'm sure you've had hard days, hard weeks,
definitely.
But you still have to be able to maintain the sense of I can do this if I continue to push.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is I am a firm believer, just from my life experiences, that you can absolutely do anything you put your mind to. You can accomplish anything, but it takes a lot of hard work. You have to do the work. You can't, just be I want to do this and then not work towards it. You have to really, really, it has to be what you really want, and you really have to tooth and nail it. And it's not going to be easy. Oh my gosh, I've been doing this for almost 16 years. I've been working at this for 16 years, come this fall. And I was lucky enough to while I was in Texas and stuff, I had some friends in the voiceover community out in LA, and they recommended me for a couple jobs or auditions, and I ended up booking them. So I started flying out into LA to do work, and people were always isn't that a lot of money for a plane ticket to go out for a gig? And I'm it's not about the money. It's about building the connections. It's about building first of all, I just love to act, and it's not about the money. It's never been about the money for me. It's just, I want to be doing this, and it's about building those bridges. And it's crazy because those same bridges I built pre-pandemic, I'd moved to Los Angeles in the middle, right when the summer of COVID, when everything happened.
Because
because nothing in my life is easy, Kiff.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's fine. It's just you appreciate things more when it's not easy.
Yeah, they absolutely do.
Yeah. So I had for like a year and a half, like I'd been flying back and forth. I'd been taking classes out here. I'd been building like connections and stuff. And my fiance was working at Riot Games out here as a VO designer. So he had moved out a year before. I was like, okay, I'm gonna get all my ducks in a row. I'm gonna get all my demos made out here. I'm gonna take these classes. It's gonna be great. And then I sat down. To start like emailing agents my demos, Kiff, and it was the day before the lockdown happened, and I was like, I was in Texas, the lockdown happened. I was like, oh, I guess I'm gonna wait. And end up like, you know, like freaking out like everybody was, because I'm like, oh my gosh, like how am I gonna make ends meet? What's going on? I had just leased a studio space in LA for Sound Cadence because I was like, oh, I'm gonna move out there. I'm gonna have like this two locations, try to like get like more work, and like, you know, because I also like to cast like across the country. Like I don't like, coming from Ohio, like I don't want location to matter. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna have like these two locations and I'm gonna try to get more work and bring more opportunities to everybody. And literally I'd signed this lease and then everything went into lockdown. I'm like, oh no, what am I gonna do? I can't even use the space. What am I gonna do?
Oh my God.
So it was very stressful. I got through it, and then our lease was still up, because I mean, my roommates who are also actors were like, our lease is still up. I'm like, let's just go. Let's move. I'm like, something in my gut is telling me, like, let's just move. Also, we're in Texas. Nobody's taking like the COVID precautions seriously.
Yeah, right.
Let's get out of Dodge. Let's do it. So packed up the cars and my cats and drove from Texas to LA. And you know, like it, and worked on like getting things set up. I ended up dropping the lease on that space because I'm like, nobody's coming in to record. Yeah. There's no reason for me to have this space right now.
Yeah.
And so like, thankfully, like, you know, through the connections that I had made pre-pandemic, like I had work, like I had remote work, because we had like, we invested in like a booth at home, like we all split the cost. Great. And so I was able to work remotely with the connections I'd made in LA and all the connections I'd built up in Texas over the years, plus my online client. So I was like, oh my gosh, things are okay. I was so scared. Things are okay. And thankfully, like, I, you know, it's just crazy. Like, it's crazy. Like things have been, you know, I'm very, very thankful and like very blessed. Like things have like turned out this way, because like, you know, the studio ended up, like, because of COVID, we ended up like taking on more projects for different clients because they needed to hit the same output. So we started doing like more like dubs and like for like live action and like anime and everything for different companies. So the studio's been doing great, to where I finally was able to, like, you know, also have a space out here now too. And I'm hoping to grow that in the future and just like bring more cool projects to everybody.
Beautiful. Oh, that's amazing. That's, dude, I mean, and like on one level, like moving during the pandemic seems like the worst possible thing. Yeah. But I do feel like at the same time, and I know, like, when we moved to Los Angeles, we moved here right after the recession, and like back in 2011. And that was it, like, with the benefit of hindsight, like it couldn't have been a better time. There were more options. The rates were at a place where it was you know, oh man, like, and it felt like a garbage fire at the time, but there was, looking back on it now, going, oh, I can see, you know, and like, that rear view mirror, the benefit of having a rear view and looking at like everything that you've gone through in your life prepared you to meet this opportunity. And now to be someone who's creating opportunities for other people like yourself, as well as your friends, and I mean, it's just, it's such a tremendous story, dude. Like, it's incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, like, I just, like, you know, like, I especially feel like with the way technology is going, like, I feel like location, like, shouldn't matter. Like, I feel like people, like, should have access to these opportunities. And, you know, like, it's just, I'm just very excited in that regard. And again, like, super thankful. Like you were saying, like, I was terrified. I'm like, what if everything crashes and burns and like, I don't have any work, or like, I'm like, you know, but again, I just reminded myself, like, hey, like, you're going to be okay no matter what. Like, you'll live out of your car. It'll be fine.
Yeah. You'll find a way.
Yeah, I'll find a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been so neat. And then like through those same opportunities, like through those same connections, like I had made, like, you know, not only do I have wonderful friends out here now, but also like I've gotten to cast and direct for video games out here in Los Angeles for like different studios, and just being able to like help in that way. Like it's been really, really cool.
Oh, Amazing. Well, let me ask, yeah, just as we're starting to wind down, I'd love to get, for, because I know that our listeners are fascinated by, like, not only your journey and your story, but like, and I think in the telling of your story throughout, you've been giving really powerful and valid advice about how to get through and how to maintain a positive attitude through everything. But then like some of the stuff, because of anime's sort of growth and things, and the volume of auditions, and sort of it being not necessarily unknown, but more people are, a wide variety of people are participating in it now in a way that is growing outside of, you know, I had always heard, you know, well, it's only available in Texas. That's where it is, if you want to do it. So, like, what are the skills that, as you're directing and casting, that you're looking for from people who can bring to an audition that will get your attention or make you be like, oh, I want to work with this person?
Yeah, this is such a great question, Kev. And like, for me personally, like, it's going to be different per person, but like, sure, for me personally, there's like a few things. Number one, it should be straightforward, but being a wonderful actor, like acting, like being able to really like bring yourself into the role, like that's super important. Mm-hmm. And just like trusting your creative choices. So like, let's say like everybody's already a great actor, perfect, beautimous. next, you know, like being a professional, like good human, like, yeah, just being a good person is so important, especially if you're going to spend like X amount of hours or days with somebody in the booth.
Yeah.
But as far as skill sets go, cold reading is so huge because you don't get the script in advance. So like, you know, like being able to cold read really well, making strong decisions. If you have like a good eye for like flaps and timing, like even better. Mm-hmm. But for me, like the baseline, I don't mind helping somebody with the technicals and, you know, taking more time to help them with the technicals, like, you know, hitting timing and everything. If they're a wonderful actor,
yeah,
they're a wonderful, yeah, actor and a wonderful person. Like, I want to work with you. That's just kind of like, you know, for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's becoming more and more and more important. Not that it hasn't always been important to an extent, but like, right, you're right. I don't want to spend a bunch of time on set with someone who's a dick. Life, this work is fun and can be fun, and especially when you're in a studio space and it's just you and a mixer and the talent. It's like, this can be a long haul if someone's salty or pushback or any of those things.
Yeah, exactly. And like, especially now, because you have like more and more people who are wanting to pursue this career, there are so many wonderful, talented people who are nice and would appreciate the work. So if you get somebody who's like a diva, it's like, okay, well, like, there are, you know, like, you, even if they're really good, it's like, you might be really good, but like, you know, there are people who are really good that nobody knows about. So
That's absolutely true. Do you like listen to reels and stuff, or is it almost exclusively audition based for like finding talent?
That's a good question. So for me, like, it depends on the medium. Sometimes, as you know, there's not time to do auditions. And like, so a lot of the video game casting I do is reel based. So please, anybody who's listening to this, have a website, have your reels on your landing page and make them downloadable, please, for the love of everything.
Okay.
It's so, you'd be surprised how many people that I'm like, oh, I love this person's work, I want to use them, and they don't have a reel, or I can't access the reel. Because as you know, like for a lot of stuff, like especially for stuff that's not through my own studio, like I have to get client approval. It has to go through like multiple levels of approval, and I have to be able to download the file and send it. And if I can't get that file,
then it doesn't matter. And then you're sending someone to go to a bunch of link pages, and no one wants to do that. You want to be able to send your top 5 or 10 selects. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like super important. And then, but I also do auditions too. So it just depends.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, be prepared for everything, like you said. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you had initially made your own reel, is that right? And then went and got a reel made when you got out here, or what was your process with reel construction, and how do you feel about, you know, especially since you're like, I agree with you, like, you can do this work anywhere and you should be able to, you know, but consequently, you know, not everybody has you know, Mark Grau or Chuck and Stacy around to make their reel. Like, what do you recommend for folks who are getting started, who've got talent, but they're younger and they're like especially passionate about the projects that you're working on?
Yeah, I would say first things first, like, make sure, like, you're definitely, like, ready for a reel. And, like, I don't mean, like, oh, like, you need X number of credits. Just, like, make sure that, like, you're going to be able to showcase, like, the best that you can do and that you're also competitive professionally. Because one of the worst, it's such a sad situation, but sometimes people, like, will put together reels and it doesn't, it's not, like, a good reel or doesn't showcase what they can do. And it leaves a bad impression, especially if you're, like, cold emailing and stuff. And some people will listen to new reels when you send them, but you never know that one person will be like, oh, I've heard your reel before and that wasn't good, so I'm not going to use you.
Yeah.
So just being ready. And then using, like, it's, if you're making your own reel, like, it's really important to use, like, original copy. Like, don't mimic characters. Like, don't do impressions unless you're, like, amazing at impressions. And I mean, like, competing in the LA sphere with
right.
your impressions.
Right.
Like, because, like, you don't want somebody to be listening to, like, oh, this sounds really good. But, like, wait, I recognize that line. Isn't that from, like, Naruto or something, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So having, like, original copy like that, making sure it's, like, no longer than a minute and 30 seconds. If it's like a character reel, the shorter, the better. Just, like, you know, hit hard with, like, the best stuff you got. And it doesn't have to be a bunch of different voices either. It can be showing off your acting in different situations. Just make sure they're fully fleshed characters and not just like, I'm doing a voice, because you can hear when somebody's just doing a voice into the void.
Yes.
Versus having the character grounded, you know, in their truth.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And,
excellent.
I made mine because, like, again, I dabbled in radio plays and everything. So it's like, I knew how to do sound effect design. Like, I knew how to, like, get royalty free music and, like, put it together.
Yeah.
But if, you know, like, and I also had no money, so I had no choice. So I'm like, this is what's happening, bro. Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
But for people who, like, are looking to, like, have reels professionally made that aren't in location, like, I know a lot of places are doing them remotely now too.
Oh, yeah.
I would say just be careful. Like, you don't want to spend a ton of money, like, especially if you're, like, just starting out. Like, you don't want to spend a ton of money on it. But it's also, if you feel you're ready and you feel you're competitive, it's good to invest money into it because it's your calling card. Like, it's what's gonna get you jobs.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, such great advice. And, like, and you're so correct, you know, like, about that the difference between playing a character and doing a voice. And so many folks are like, oh, I can do this impression of Peter Griffin. Like,
right.
Yeah, everyone can do Peter Griffin and to varying degrees of success, but there's already someone who does Peter Griffin and and he's the creator for the show. So you know, like, that kind of stuff is like, it on one level, it's like it demonstrates your skill and your ear, but how's your Bradley Cooper? How's your Chris Pratt? Who's working today? Can you match them if you're an impressionist? Can you act like them?
Yes.
You know, all those things. And then your incarnates are, you know, and that goes to, you know, cartoon characters and all that other kind of stuff. But, like, you know, to be I think it's so important to explore being a multi-hyphenate, to explore when you have the experience to be able to direct and, like, and I'm with you. Like, the greatest joy is sending a note to a friend or a colleague and saying, hey, I've got money and script. Can you cut this for me? And the joy that comes back, that gift of being someone who casts it's so fulfilling. And just knowing how hard it is to get work to be able to give it is the greatest feeling in the world.
Absolutely. Especially, like, if you know, you've worked with or seen really talented individuals that, like, maybe, like, haven't been able to get opportunities. Like, it's just amazing to be like, here, like, I think you're amazing. And, like, you know, like, I want to help, like, here, like, and again, like, everything has to get approval anyway. So it's just, like, you know, just giving somebody, like, a chance to get their foot in the door is just so unbelievable. And, like, I've had, like, you know, of course, through my own journey, as I'm sure you have, Kif, that people have gone to bat for you. Like, they've gone to bat for me. And that's made all the difference in my life. So it's, you know, just definitely returning where you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Always looking for opportunities to share. And, like, that sense of, you know, having of being in service to the story, being in service to the industry, to yourself and to your colleagues. I think it's one of the things that gives me a tremendous amount of joy in the career. And, you know, as does being able to meet fellow performers who like yourself, who share so freely your, you know, not only your story and the challenges, but your advice and recommendations and experience. And I'm so glad to know you, and to at least now I feel like I know you after the hour and a half conversation.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, thank you so much, Kip. Like, yeah, it's definitely like, I feel like, you know, I love a lot of books like Brené Brown, and it's all about like the power of vulnerability, and like the same thing with like acting and performance. Like, it's everything we're going through, it's about the human condition and like relating to each other and building those connections. And, you know, so I feel like, especially when I was younger, like I wouldn't share things because I was like, oh, like I don't want people to, you know, think that like I'm weak or anything. But it's actually so interesting that through like talking and like sharing your experiences and like opening up those wounds, like people can heal from that, from just, it's wild. Like, they have that connection, and it's just, oh man. Yeah. I love acting. I love acting. It's so good. It's a great channel for all this stuff too. Like, it's just like, use it. I'm just going to use it.
I mean, that's wonderful. And to be in a place where you've got the ability to use it, you know, that it doesn't stop you, or, you know, and then you find, do you, my wife just went through this after doing a show that, in a way, the show itself was, the show process was not traumatic, but the content of the show was deeply traumatic. She's African American and did a show that was dealing with the pandemic and George Floyd and all those things.
Oh,
and
my gosh,
highly traumatic content. But then, you know, you get done with the show and you have to kind of tell yourself, I'm okay. And de-rolling is a term that came out of that, of like using what's there, using it, but then being able to seal it off, close the window, end the spell, fade out the song, whatever, so that you can move on with your day. With light and joy and positivity.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
You know, and finding solutions of navigating that. And that's so important when we, you know, because you never know, especially when you're cold reading, you never know what you're walking into in a session.
No, exactly.
You know, I mean, some of the shows that I've dubbed, like, there's been, you walk in, you don't get any context, and it's a scene of tremendous trauma. And,
absolutely.
You know, and you have to recognize that, okay, I have to be honest to this scene. I played Kay and Tomo's father in the movie Belle. I did the English dub for that.
Oh, Belle's beautiful.
Isn't it? Oh my
God. Oh my God.
And you know, and it's the penultimate scene now I'm blanking on the character's name. Well, you know, Belle, when she goes to find the kids, and, you know, and I'm playing the dad, and it's a horrifying, traumatic, abusive scene. And like diving into those spaces and making it authentic was painful, and but also healing, you know. I mean, it's extraordinary. Totally.
Yeah. So. No, 100%. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But listen, how can people find you, follow you on socials, reach out to you to connect for either, how could people find you in the world?
Oh yeah. I mean, super easy. Everything's just my real name, Amber Lee Connors, Connors, because it gets confused for an E a lot of the time. So I'm spelling it out. but yeah, like, everything's on my website, www.amberleeconnors. But you can also follow me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, just all at Amber Lee Connors.
Amazing. It's been such a joy talking with you today. Thank you so much, Amber, for coming on.
Thank you so much, Kip. Like, I really appreciate it. This was wonderful. Thank you for reaching out.
You bet. My pleasure. And thank you for listening. We will have more episodes coming soon. Have a great afternoon, evening, morning, whenever this is that you're listening to it. Peace. This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kip VH, produced by Werewolf Therewolf. Please consider giving the show a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Look, I know I keep asking for a review, but if you found just one piece of info from me or my guests helpful, please share that with me and share it and help grow our VO community. Feel free to catch up with me on Instagram, Twitter, Clubhouse, or Vero at KiffVH, or hit me up on LinkedIn. It's Kiff Fan and Yuval. Just search for Kiff. We probably know a couple of the same people. And check out my website, www.kiffvh.com, for my reels, updates, and to reach out to me directly for coaching or appearances. claim victory and depart the field.
Taxi? Taxi?
I guess I gotta walk from here. Okay.